Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Chof Amud Bet. Six lines up, the last word on the line is right below the Mishnah, which is Tanan Hatam. We have a Mishnah in Oalot. Echad Chor Shecharu Amayim, whether it's a tunnel or a hole that was carved out by the water, Oshvatzim, or it was done by animals, little rodents that dug out the hole, Oshachalto Malachat, or it was eaten up by the Malachat. Rashi says that Haaretz Mlecha Umitbakat Me'alea. It's a salty, whether that's a saline water, or whether that's the dryness of the land that causes cracking in the ground. So you end up with these crevices from the cracking in the ground. V'chein Mitbach Avanim, or Matbech Avanim, whether you have this irregular stack of bricks that are there, they're not necessarily in order, so there's gapping between them. V'chein tzvar shel korot, or you have these boards that are stacked up, stacks of boards that again have gapping. They're there waiting to be used for construction, but those boards are laying on top of each other. There's gapping underneath them. Mahil ala tuma. All of these types of crevices, holes, cracks create oel. They can create an oel as long as they meet the minimum requirement of a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. They can all make an oel. Yehud omer, po'ol she'en asui bide adam, ein oel. All of these are naturally occurring oelim. They were not built to be an oel. They happen to be an oel because something created a tunnel, a crevice, or by the nature where the bricks or the boards were stacked, they ended up making a covering of a hole. So Rabbi Yehuda says that anything that's not man-made is not an oel. Now when he says man-made here, it doesn't literally mean that it's made by man. It has to be with intent. It has to be intent to cover, intent to have an oel. So the difference being whether it happened naturally or it happened with intent. But even when the human being stacks things up and makes things, if the oel wasn't created intentionally, that is not sufficient. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the only way to have an oel is to intend for an oel to be there. My time with the Rabbi Yehuda. Yalif ohel ohel mi mishkan. He learns out ohel from the mishkan. Tivocho says over here, zot hatorah adam ki amut be'ohel in Parshat Chukat, in Parshat Parah. It says over there that this is the Torah of an adam that dies in an ohel. Tivotam by the mishkan. This week's parsha, vayfroset ohel ala mishkan. They spread the oil over the mishkan. Malahalan bide adam. Over here by the mishkan, it's man-made and made with intent to be an ohel. Afkan bide adam. So too over here, when we're talking about an ohel by para, we learn that out from bide adam. Tosafot over here spends time in understanding, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that we learn this all out from the ohel of mishkan. Then how do we have the different materials that are good for an ohel? In the mishkan, only pishtan is used as an ohel, or maybe a semer. They should be the only type of things that can be an ohel. He says, you learn out of a kavachomer from Mitzorah. By Mitzorah, it also says that ohel is problematic, but there it says moshavo, where he lives, or his living space. From there, we can darshan that multiple materials are also good. That's what it says. It's a gilui milta. And then we invoke the principle here of ohel from the Mishkan to teach us only things that are bidei adam, not bidei shemayim. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, say ohel, ohel riba, that the word ohel appears numerous times in the context of parah, or pashat parah. And therefore, we include all different types of olim. That's whether it's made bidei adam or it's made bidei shemayim, whether it's a natural occurring ohel or it's an ohel that's intentionally made or man-made. Savar Rabbi Yehuda ko'ol she'enu asui bidei adam eino ohel. Is that really true? That's Rabbi Yehuda's position, that an ohel that's not made with intent is not an ohel. V'riminu, don't we have a mishnah in parah? Parah, it says, chatzarot ayub nuyot b'Yerushalayim. They used to build these special areas in Yerushalayim. Agava sela. They're built on top of bedrock. V'tachteyem chlau. And then they used to put them up on stilts of sort, because they wanted to leave an empty space, an airspace below them. V'pnei kever atehom. Now kever atehom, as Rashi defines it over here, is kol shem kever atehom tumat atehom shebesas loshon safeku. Safek tuma. They have safek tumata mate. They don't know if someone is buried there. So in order to be sure that there's no tumata mate in this location, first of all, you use bedrock, which is unlikely to have someone buried in there. And even if they are buried in there, they would probably be in a koch or something that has a ohel on it. But beyond that, they build on top of it, the house that they built on top of it, they put on top of what they call kipim. Kipim, they put them on top of arches. They hold it up so that there's airspace under the house. So that would act as the ohel to protect the tumah from rising into the house or the area above it. Then, umevim nashim ubrot viodot sham. They bring women who are pregnant, and they give birth in this house. Umigadlot b'nehem sham lepara. And they bring up their children specific there as designated for tarat ha-para, special tahor location. Now, children, they utilize only until the age of 6 or 7. Once they are 6 or 7, maybe 8, they age out of the program. Because that is the age where we start to worry that they might have shechvat zera balkeri, and then they'll have tuma yotzei migufam. So we're trying to prevent from those higher levels of tuma, tumatamei, and tuma yotzei migufo. So they're not allowed to be there anymore. The reason is that we want to prevent any form of tuma. And the truth is they really don't prevent every form of tuma because the women give birth there. When they give birth there, they have tumata nida, tumata leida. But that we're not worried about because that has tahara, or easy form of tahara. We're worried about is tumata meit, which is going to require hazaah, it's going to require shiva yamim, para duma, that we don't want to get involved with. So what we do is have these children that are born there, and then they live in this chatzer, they're brought up there bitara, because they're going to utilize them for umevin shvarim, they bring over these oxen, valgabehem daltot, and they put on top of them, obviously not doors, but daltot here mean wide platforms that are sitting on top of these shvarim, bitinokot yoshvim agabehem. And then they place them on top of them. So somewhat maybe akin to the elephants when they have those big thrones that are on top of an elephant. That type of idea that they're sitting on some sort of wide-based seat or a throne on top. Because social evin biyadahim. And they're carrying stone utensils. Higio lishiloach. They rode on these animals until they reached the shiloach, which is the water source for Yerushalayim. Yardu l'toch hamayim umil'um. They go into the water and they fill up these cups for water. And they get back on the shore and they sit down. He doesn't get off the shore. All this work, and now he's going to get off the shore. He's got to stay on there. Because we're worried about this safek tuma again. So we don't allow them to descend from it, but rather they draw the water over the side. Rashi explains over here, that's the difference between the two opinions here. That this one Tana believes that miloy amayim has to be done biyadayim, that to physically take the water out, draw the water. The other one says they can lower it by rope and pull it in, and that is sufficient. Tosafot says we never find such a machloket. Nobody thinks that you have to be malay the water by yadayim. But rather, he says the machloket here is whether we're choshesh for kever to home in such a short distance. From descending from the shore to get the water from the shiloach, do we worry about kever to home in that short distance or not? And that is the machloket between them. The whole purpose of this is in Mishnayot and Parah, is to create the new para duma, the new ashes of the para duma. We remember in Yoma, we discussed this, that they used to take the Kohen, they would sequester him for the 7 days before. They supposed to sprinkle on him from every para duma that they had for the 7 days. They did all these taharot in terms of making the new para duma. The reason for that is, we've explained this in the past, is that the Tzdukim believed that in order to do the process of the para duma, the person had to be absolutely tahor. Couldn't be tamei at all. Whereas Chazal believed that it could be even be a tvul yom in order to process the para duma. So what they used to do was intentionally be mitamei the individual and make him into a tvul yom so that they would do it as a tvul yom to show that the tzdukim are wrong. But by doing that, you somewhat lower the standard of para duma because you're making the person tamei. In order to offset that, they did everything else on super duper tahara. That means they only use clay avanim, which we just saw over here. They only use stone utensils that are not mikabel tuma whatsoever. And this whole process with the children, who were also sequestered for this tahara, that they remained tahor their whole lives, never had any tumata made, and then they go fill the water and all of this process in order to make it in a level of super tahara. So one of those things is that they lived in these houses up on stilts, and then they rode on these oxen with platforms. Riding on the oxen with the platforms, again, it's so that they have an ohel below them. That platform or that throne that they're sitting on is wide enough that it creates an ohel and protects them from any tuma that is below. So it's all part of this process of maintaining the super tahara of the para duma. So they draw that water, and that water eventually is going to be given over to have the ashes of the para duma placed in it. And what's interesting about that is we learned in Yoma as well, when we darshan in the whole parsha of para, in parshat chukat, there the word ish in kohen appears. And if you remember, Gemara there says there's no consistent limud because some of them are mutsi, and some of them are merabeh. So sometimes we say it has to be a Kohen, sometimes it doesn't have to be a Kohen, sometimes it has to be a man, sometimes it could be a woman. Now one of the things that has to be done by an ish and not a katan, that's one of the limudim there, is the placing of the ashes into the water or some part of the process. So despite all of this tara all along, you're going to end up having an adult get involved at some point. So you have to say that this whole process, again, was this elevation of tara to offset the tumah to the Kohen. If you remember in the Yomam and other places, we have in Shas that Rashi and Tosafot disagree about what that means that we're mitameh, they're going. Tosafot says they just do it mit derabanan. They make them into a tbol yom derabanan to offset the tzdukim, even though that's a little bit questionable because they might even hold that he's tameh because it's all tumah derabanan. Rashi seems to indicate that they make him tameh deoraita, that they make him really tameh to make him into a tbol yom mit deoraita. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yom yivim daltot, ela shvarim. They never brought these platforms, but they rode directly on the oxen. Now, v'hashvarim, do'o'el she'in asui be'edei adamhu, he believes that the shore is sufficient to create the barrier. You don't need the platform on top. But if that's the case, what are you doing? This is a shore that is an ohel, certainly not be'edei adam. This is a natural occurring ohel. Tani Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yom yivim daltot, ela shvarim. And you see that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to this position that an ohel created by a shore is an ohel. So that clearly means a natural occurring ohel is an ohel, and against what we suggested before in the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Here's our first attempt to explain the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda appears in our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yehuda says that we used to sleep under the beds in the sukkah. The suggestion here is that Rabbi Yehuda's position is premised on this idea that an ohel is only something where you intend it to be an ohel. When you make a bed up on legs, the purpose of the bed is to sleep on top of it, not to create the ohel or the empty space underneath it. If that's the case, then that ohel is not bidei adam. Even though it's man-made, it's not bidei adam because you don't intend to create the ohel underneath it. And that's why he thinks that you could sleep under the bed inside of the sukkah. That's what the Gemara suggests. And the Gemara is now challenging that from the Mishnah in Parah that says that he thinks that you can ride on a shore and that's enough of an ohel, which seems to be that a natural occurring ohel is an ohel. That's the case. That does not explain his position in our Mishnah. So that's what the Gemara now says, or modifies that understanding of Rabbi Yehuda and says, Yad Rabdimi, Am Rabbi Lazar, Mode Rabbi Yehuda, Mlo Egrof. Rabbi Yehuda admits when it is a fist, the side of a fist. Now Rashi says here, Mlo Egrof, Ze Egrofosha Ben Avtiach, Yeshno Gadol Karosh Kol Adam. If you remember from Yoma, that is the fist of Ben Avtiach, who is this very large Kohen Gadol. Over there, the Gemara discusses about his chufnayim that they used and his pometz, the massive size of his fist. It says it's the same size as some people's head. That's how big his fist is. That's what we're talking about there. That's the maloi grof that we're talking about. But that maloi grof, he agrees, is an ohel. So what we have in Rabbi Yehuda now is that there are actually two standards in ohel. There's a standard of ohel that we know, which is tefach by tefach by tefach, which is a tefach cubed. That only applies to be an ohel when it's man-made. Man-made means it's intentionally made to be an ohel, then suffices to be a tefach cubed. If it's a naturally occurring ohel or an unintentional ohel, then it's kamoloi grof. Then if you get that fistful, not our fistful, but the fistful of this large kohen gadol, so say the size of someone's head, if you have an ohel that's that size, even if it's naturally occurring, then it is an ohel. So all he's done is created two standards in ohel. There is the lower threshold, which is when you do it bidei adam. And then there's a higher threshold, the maloi grof. That's when it's even bidei shamayim. So that solves our problem here, because by the shore, that's a natural clearing ohel, and it's clearly bigger than a fistful, the ohel. We'll discuss what the ohel is here by the animal, but it's definitely bigger than a fistful, and that's why it's okay. Although, then that's going to run us into a problem with our Mishnah. In our Mishnah under the bed, it's also greater than a fistful, that space, and maybe that should be considered an ohel, so we'll get there in a second. Here we have Tanya Nami Ochi. We have a braita that supports this Tosafot comments over here that it's not a braita, it's a Mishnah, an explicit Mishnah. It might be because it's found in Tarot. Like we said before, the Gemara cheats the end of Tarot, or Tarot in general, a little differently, almost similar to a Gemara, because there is no Gemara on the Mishnayot in Tarot. So maybe that's why it says Tanya Nami Ochi instead of Tznan over here. Umode Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Bishkifin Ubenikike Aslaim. He agrees with these constructs, these natural constructs that they are in Ohel. So this is to your question, Fred, about a cave. Here, by Shkifim are Slaim and Noflim. These are rocks that fell, big boulders that fell, Umid Parkim, and then they cracked apart. Either where they were dislodged from, or under them, there are large now Ohalim. There are either crevices, caves that were left behind, and those are considered to be an Ohel. Or Nikike, Hasela, are the crevices or the cracks in the bedrock. So these are considered to be Ohalim, but those are naturally occurring. So how do you explain Rabbi Yehuda's position? Ela must be that he believes that a natural occurring ohel is an ohel, just has a higher threshold or a higher standard to be an ohel. So now, Vari Delet, Tiyesh Ba Kamei Grofim, Kitani Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Yom Yivim Deltot, Ela Shvarim. So what about the Delet? Why didn't they use the delet? He doesn't want you to use this platform that it's sitting on, because he says the purpose of the platform is for the child to sit on top, not for it to be an oil underneath. But the space between that platform and the ground is many fistfuls, so it clearly clears the threshold that he thinks, and why can't it be an oil? So he says, no, no, you misunderstood what he was saying. He's not saying it doesn't work. He's saying that it's not necessary. It's not necessary because you have the shore already. You don't need the delet. It's not saying that the delet doesn't work and the shore does work. He's saying that you don't need the delet because you're already riding on the ox, which it of itself is an ohel. Rav Amar, lo ayu mevim deltot kol ikar. Pnei shedato shotino gasalav. He says, no, Rav Yehuda's objection to bringing these deltot is because the problem of what the children are going to feel. When they are sitting on these platforms or these thrones, they're going to feel much more secure on the back of the shore. And therefore, he'll be gasalav. He'll feel so comfortable, so at ease. Shemi yotzi rosho echad me'evrav. He'll lean over the side, he'll lean over the edge, and he'll be beyond the platform. Once he goes beyond the platform, he's no longer protected. Bitamei bekever atom, and he'll become tamei. So why don't like these platforms? Because they give too much security to the child that's riding on them, and he's likely to lean over, he'll do things because he feels so secure. You put him on the back of the ox, it's not so secure. He's not going to feel, he's going to be moving back and forth, he's going to hold on, and he won't move beyond the sides of the shore of the oxen. So we prefer that because it keeps the child stationary on top of the oxen instead of moving around on top of the oxen. It's a protective measure. Because if we don't allow it, he'll lean over, vitamei, bekever at home. And that's what we're worried about all along, is that he's going to be mahil over some unknown kever that we have there of tumatameit. Tanyo kavote de Rovo. We have a brayta that supports Rovo's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo, ayu mevi'im daltot kol ikar. They didn't use these platforms or these thrones. Mipnei shedatosho tino gasalav. Shem yotzi rosho echad me'avirav mitma bekever at home. And we don't put him on these riding platforms because he might feel way too comfortable. Then either stick his head out to look over the side, stick his foot, his arm out, then he'll be ma'ahil on a kever that we don't know about. Ella, mevim shvarim ha-mitzrim. They bring these Egyptian oxen. Shekresel tehem rechavot. They have very wide bellies. And then they sit on top of them. Kosochel evin biyadehem. They have these stone utensils in their hands. Gil the shiloach. They reach the shiloach. Again, the spring that feeds the water to Yerushalayim. Yerdu umilum, they dismount and they fill them up, valu, and they get back on the oxen, viyashvu alehen agaben, and they ride on the back of them. But here you have a braita that supports Rova's understanding in Rabbi Yehuda that the reason they didn't use these platforms is not because they're not an ohel. They don't use these platforms because they might lead to something that we don't want, which is that the child is leaning over the sides and would defeat the whole purpose of having the platform that's there. Therefore, we have them right in the back of the shvarim directly where they're a little more insecure, not at ease, and therefore they're going to stay stationary on top of the shore, and we get these especially wide, big shvarim that create the ohel that's here, and therefore they are protected from tuma below. But in the end now, in terms of reconciling, we have Rabbi Yehuda who thinks that naturally occurring ohalim are not an ohel, but that's qualified by the statement is as long as they're not as big as a meloeg grof. As soon as they reach a meloeg grof, even naturally occurring or unintentional ohalim take on the force of an ohel, just like a regular ohel of Adam, where you create it, which is a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. We had a havamino that Rashi says, kasaka date mishum den derech ohel bekach, v'koch shekein svarim. We thought the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's position, why he thought they didn't use those platforms and they used the shore, is because the platforms were not made to be an ohel. That's not a regular ohel. And so Gemara is that that's not the case. That's not the position of Rabbi Yehuda. The whole position of Rabbi Yehuda is premised on, number one, these natural occurring ohalim can be an ohel. And number two is we're worried about those platforms allowing the children to lean over their sides. So far we are good with Rabbi Yehuda's position. The only thing that we haven't done now is we can't reconcile him with our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that he slept under the bed, he's fine. And that's what the Gemara asks right now in regards to the bed. What about a bed? A bed has plenty of space under there that even if it's not intended to be an ohel, it is an ohel by design or by nature because it has the meloeg grof, which is the minimum standard or threshold for Rabbi Yehuda. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Omer, our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, shiny mita, holu gaba suya. A mita is different because it's built to utilize the top of it. You're right that it creates a natural ohel underneath of it, but that's not the intent, that is not the purpose of the mita. So he says, Shvarim nami de gabana suin. Wait a minute, that's the shore. How do you say that a shore is an ohel? It's made to be ridden on the back of the shore. It's not made to be an ohel on top of it. No, because the shvarim are used as an ohel. They're utilized in such a manner because the shepherds, when they're out in the field and it's very hot or it's raining out, they need protection from the elements. They used to slide themselves underneath the bellies of the shvarim in order to protect themselves. That was their shelter from underneath the shvarim. So they're being utilized in that way. It's not just utilized by the back of the shore. You're using the underneath of the shore to protect you from the elements that are outside. Not sure which person wants to stick their head underneath the shore. You know, if he decides to sit down, then it's not in good shape. But the shepherds used them as a form of shelter. They knew when to move. They used them as shelter. By doing so, then they make them into an ohel. Where it says, wait a minute, Tihochi mitanami. What about your bed? Oh, migina al minalaim visandalim. Right, you put your shoes under your bed. Yeah, you take off your shoes, you slide them under your bed. People store things that are under it. So why can't you say them? They also protect the shoes that are underneath. They are. The space underneath is utilized. Now Rashi says that they use shoes as the example here because other things are improper to place underneath it. We actually saw that in the Gemara in Pesachim, that you're not allowed to store food underneath your bed. There is a discussion of what the problem is. Ruach ra, if it's enclosed, then maybe it's okay, but you're not allowed to store food under your bed. Here Rashi says that aval atay tachtei dvarim acharim ginai hulo, that it's inappropriate to put other things under your bed besides your shoes, or margil b'nei beito l'sham. The other reason is that if you store things there, people are going to come to get it. If you're underneath your bed's a storage closet, then the rest of the family is going to be coming there. And you don't want people coming into your bedroom or underneath your bed at all times to get things. That's a lack of tzniut, inappropriate. So that's why we only put minor things like your shoes underneath your bed. But either way, you're still utilizing the space underneath to protect that which is underneath it. How is that any different than the shore? El amar rava, shiny shvarim, hoyo basuim lagin al b'nei ma'ayim shalahem. A shore has a different status. The reason that a shore is considered an ohel is because it's protective of itself. Its rib cage, its upper layer protect the organs that are vital organs that are beneath it. The intestines, the digestive system that is beneath it is protected by the spinal cord and the rib cage that creates a poreis, a protective cover over the remainder of the body of the shore. He says that's what we have in the Pasuk. Shinemar, Pasuk in Yov. There it's actually not speaking about a shore, it's speaking about a human being. But it says, Or Ubasar Talbisheni, you clothed me in skin and flesh. Ubatzamot Vigidim to Sochacheni. And you put on me bones and sinews to Sochacheni to you sheltered or put over me. But again, the idea that they're protective. The bones and the sinews are protective of the or in the basar, but also of the structure, the internal organs of the individual are protected by the structure of their body. So here they're going to extrapolate that, just like by human being, kosher came to an animal, where the animal is created in such a way that its whole body shields the internal organs and which is below it. So based on the fact that the pasuk calls that schach, calls that a shelter, we're going to say by a shore that the body of the shore shelters itself. By sheltering itself, that is the schach. It's not for an external usage, it's actually for the shore itself. It creates that ohel over its own body. The solution, again, is yes, a shore works not because it creates an external ohel, but because it itself is an ohel, and the pasuk describes it as an ohel. So we're not going to compare mitah to that. The mitah doesn't have that same description or same purpose. It's always covering over an external item. It's not covering over itself. It's not an ohel in and of itself. And that's why by mitah, he allowed them to, they slept under it in the sukkah, whereas by the shore, we consider that to be enough of an ohel to protect the children that are riding above from kever to home. Vibay tema, another approach to this solution for Rabbi Yehuda is, Rabbi Yehuda the Tame. Rabbi Yehuda is the shitato, which we saw earlier in the Masechta, which is damar, sukkah dirat keva be'inan. That sukkah has to be a permanent structure that we saw in the beginning of the Masechta, that Rabbi Yehuda allows it to be more than 20 amot high. He says you have to have walls that are structurally sound, that can stay there. He also saw this back in Yoma with regards to the issue of mezuzah on the location where the Kohen Gadol slept in the Mikdash, Machloket over there. But we know that Rabbi Yehuda requires sukkah's dirat keva. V'havilei mitah dirat arai. Now the bed is only a temporary ohel. V'sukkah ohel keva, and the sukkah is a permanent structure. V'loati ol arai mevatel ol keva. This is something also we discussed earlier. You can't have a temporary, you can't have some sort of temporary structure come and undermine the permanent structure. We discussed, for instance, in your house. When you're in your bedroom in your house, when you sleep on your bed, you're inside your house. You put a canopy on your bed, you're still sleeping inside your house. It's not because you have a canopy on the bed now that you're sleeping in an ohel and not in your house. You're still in your house. So too over here in the sukkah, it's the same thing. In the sukkah, you put in an ohel. That doesn't say you're not in the sukkah anymore. You're still in the sukkah because whatever canopy you put in there is a temporary item, whereas the sukkah is a permanent structure. Now, if the sukkah is a temporary structure, then that's not going to be true. Because then you're dealing with temporary structure. You don't say when you're inside of a tent, and then you put something else, a canopy in there, that you're not sleeping in the canopy, because the tent is only as good as a temporary fixture. Then if you put another temporary fixture in it, it might undo or undermine what you have. When you're in a permanent structure, nobody says that when you're inside your house and you put up a tent in your bedroom that you're not inside your house still. The same thing here. Because Rabbi Yehuda says it is a diras keva, it's like being in your house. You put in a canopy in there, you're not going to change that dynamic. You're still inside of the sukkah. So you go under the bed, the same thing. You're under an ol arai, that's not going to undermine the fact that you're inside of the sukkah. Mara says, wait, v'ha Rabbi Shimon, damar nami sukkah dirat keva be'inan. We saw this earlier in the Masechta that the Gemara listed numerous opinions or Tanaim that all have the same opinion of Sukkah Dirat Keva. Rabbi Shimon is in that list. This is Rabbi Shimon argues on the Chachamim about the number of walls you need for a Sukkah. Chachamim say you only need 3 walls for a Sukkah, 2 regular walls, 1 halachic. And Rabbi Shimon said, no, you need 4 walls to the Sukkah. You need 3 regular plus the fourth one. And over there we suggest that Rabbi Shimon is in concert with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that you need a Dirat Keva for a Sukkah. Again, we said that the standards for each of them, what Dirat Keva meant, was all different, but Rabbi Shimon is in one of those individuals in that list. Yet, Rabbi Shimon believes that Atei Ol Arayim Batel Ol Keva. Rabbi Shimon is in our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon is the one who tells the story about Rabbi Gamliel and Tavi Abdo, about Tavi, the Eved of Rabbi Gamliel, who slept under the bed because he knew he was Patur Misukah. That means Rabbi Shimon believes that if you sleep under a bed, you are not Yotzei the mitzvah of Sukkah. Yet, Rabbi Shimon believes that it's an Ol Keva, and yet he says that a bed can undermine that, and an Ol Arai will ruin that. The Baruch says, okay, exactly, Baha Plige. That's exactly what the argument between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda is in our Mishnah. That Marsavati Ol Arai Umavata Ol Keva, Rabbi Shimon believes that even though Sukkah is a Dirat Keva, the Ol Arai of sleeping under the bed undermines it and ruins your ability to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Sukkah. And the other one says, no, that's not the case. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda believes that an Ol Arai can't ruin an Ol Keva. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah believes you can sleep under the bed and you're still Yotzei the mitzvah of Sukkah. And that's his story. That we used to sleep when we were kids under the beds in the Sukkah. And Rabbi Shimon believes that when you sleep under the bed, it does ruin it. Even though it's an Ol Arai, it ruins the Ol Keva. And that's why he brings the story of Rabbi Gamliel and Tavi Abdo. That Tavi slept under the bed because he was Patur Mi Sukkah. So it's exactly what they're arguing about here in our Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Shimon, Masi B'Tavi Abdo. So now we're going back to discuss this issue in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon brings over the story of Tavi Abdo. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon, Misichato Shel Rabbi Gamliel Lamadnu. From his conversation with the other Chachamim, we learn Shnei Dvarim, 2 things. Lamadnu Shabadim Turim Min HaSukkah, that an Eved Kenani is patur from Sukkah. Lamadnu Shayashin Tagan Amita Lo Yatsa Yidei Chuvato. We also learned that if you sleep under the bed, that you're not yotzei the mitzvah of Sukkah. Now the second one we've already discussed, that was just the whole sugya that we discussed now, as to why the bed ruins your ability to be in the Sukkah. So that's pretty straightforward. The problem is the first statement. We now know from Rabbi Gamliel's conversation that Eved Kenani is patur mi-Sukkah. What do you mean an Eved Kenani is patur? Eved Kenani b'Sukkah has a din in mitzvot like an Isha. And Isha is patur b'mitzvot aseh she'azman grama. And Sukkah is exactly that, a mitzvah aseh she'azman grama. Why do I need Rabbi Gamliel to tell me that they're patur mi sukkah? There's no chiddush here. Of course they're patur mi sukkah. So Tosafot over here discusses the avamina. What would have been the avamina here? The alpha gab dai mitzvah asei shez man gomara itzrich lashmi'inan. We still need it. The loteima da chayavin. We might have thought they are chayav. Shum dechtiv teshvu kein taduru. You have to live in the sukkah the way you would live in your house. So the way you live in your house, you have your wife together with you. And the way that you live in your house, you have your Eved together with you. So maybe when you're out in the Sukkah, they should also be Chayavim in the Sukkah. It would be an interesting Chiyuv here. The Chiyuv here would be because of Teshuva Kein Taduru. It would be a derivative of the man's Chiyuv to be in the Sukkah. So since the man lives in his house in such a manner with his wife, and so too in the Sukkah, he would live together with his wife in the Sukkah. So therefore the women would be obligated to be there as a derivative of the man's Chiyuv. If you describe it in this way, it might be that, you're right, the woman is not chayevet. She's only chayevet to be there because the man is in the sukkah. Or you could view it that a teshevut ein taduru takes it away from being a inside a seisher on zman grama, because the requirement here is totally different. The requirement here is to live in the sukkah. And that obligation is that anybody who lives in the house now must live in the sukkah. And then the obligation would devolve upon the woman as well.
Is there any difference between
the Tosafot asks this question in other places when the Gemara raises afein ayubot o'anes, why aren't women chayavot in the mitzvah of sukkah? Afein ayubot o'anes.
If you hold that it was on the
If it was Ananei HaKavod, which almost all the Rishonim, again, we discussed earlier, Rashi on the first daf says, that's Pashtut HaPasuk, that it was Ananei HaKavod. So now, why don't they say Afein Ayu Be'oto Anes? Tosfot asked this question a number of places, and his answer is, oh, we only apply Afein Odu Be'oto Anes by Dine Derabonon, not by Dine De'oraita. Without that, we would not say Afein Odu Be'oto Anes is only invoked by the Gemara in Nerot Chanukah, Arba Kosot, Mikra Megillah, all things that are Dine Derabanan. So he says that it doesn't apply to Sukkah of Afein Odu Be'oto Anes. There are other Mefarshim, like the Rabbeinu Tam is quoted as regards to Sudah Shlishit, that women are Chayavot in Sudah Shlishit for the reason of Afein Ayu Be'oto Anes. So there are Rishonim that are willing to invoke it even in places of De'oraita. And that could have been the Havamina over here. That the Havamina over here might be that Afein Ayu Be'oto Anes. But then we have a Gzeira Shavah. We have a Gzeira Shavah from Matzah to Sukkah, from Chamishasar, the 15th to 15th. And just like by Matzah, women are Chayavot, maybe you would say over here that by Sukkah, they are also Chayavot. And that might be the Havamina over here. There are reasons here to believe that women might be Chayavot, and that's why he says it over here that the women are Pturot. I mean, no, it's a given to us. There might have been possibilities to say otherwise. It happens to be interesting that this is the Ramah quotes, with the reason that we don't sleep in the Sukkah. He's obviously talking about in Poland. He's talking about a place like that. He said, first of all, it's just too cold. And mitztayer patur min ha-sukkah. But since it's so cold, you don't have to sit in the sukkah. Mitztayer patur min ha-sukkah. That's one reason he brings. And the second reason he brings that why we don't sleep in the sukkah is because of teshuvkein taduru. That you have to live in the sukkah the way you would live in your house. And the way you would live in your house is with your wife. And if you live with your wife in the sukkah, then you have a problem of tzniut. Because if a man and woman are living together in the sukkah and they want to be together, it wouldn't be appropriate. So therefore, since your women don't sleep in the sukkah, then we should move into the house because you want to teshuva came to do it, not be nitzkayim. It's an interesting claim, because that would assume that the Sukkot in the time of Chazal had private sections or quarters to them so that they were able to do this. Otherwise, that's a tour, and then the whole mitzvah would never exist. So you have to suggest that they had private quarters. We saw that maybe with the sukkah of Hilni Amalka, that they had separate sections and private areas, but that was the queen. Whether everybody had such sukkot, I'm not sure. But that's at least what the Ramah, that idea that the women are so integral to the mitzvah of sukkah, the Ramah brings that as a tour for sleeping in the sukkah, while we don't sleep in the sukkah, even though that's one of the major components of sukkah. Achilah and Yishina have to be done inside of the sukkah, yet we don't sleep in the sukkah. I mean, Eretz Yisrael, almost everybody sleeps in the sukkah, but in Chutz Laaretz, it's not so common. The Ramah is trying to justify that practice, and he gives two reasons, because it's mistire, and because of this teshuva gein tadura, which is what Tosfot is raising as the Havamina here in the Gemara. Now, Rabbi Shimon says, from the conversation of Rabbi Gamliel, who's speaking to the other Chachamim, and says, take a look at my super-duper Evid over here, who's a Talmud Chacham, Tavi Avdo, Tavi, who slept under the bed. We look at him. And Rabbi Shimon says, from Rabbi Gamliel's statement, we learn these two things. First of all, that Evid is patur min ha-sukkah. Number two is, if you sleep under the bed, you're not Yotzei Chovah. V'leima mitvarav shel Rabbi Gamliel. Why does it say misichato, from his conversation? Why does it say from what he paskined, or what he said over? So Milta Gaborche Kamashmalan. We get a sidebar. We learn something as an aside here, which is Yad Amaravacha Barada, Vamila Amaravacha Barada Amarav, Amnun Amarav, Minayin Shafil Sichat Talmid Chachamim Tzrichim Limud. How do you know that the conversations of the Talmid Chachamim need Limud? Limud here doesn't mean you have to investigate them, but they're important. They're a part of the learning process. When they're speaking, not engaged in issues of Torah, but they're just speaking, you need to follow along because you'll learn something from that. Shnemar valeo lo yibol, that their leaves will not wither or dry up. That is in the first parak in Tehillim. First parak in Tehillim, it's also brought in the Mishnah Avot. It's quoted there with regards to someone who has Yirat Chet and Chochmah. Here, the Rashi says the Aleh is the most insignificant part. Vis-a-vis the trunk and the branches of the tree, the leaf is something insignificant. And there it says in the Perek Tehillim, which is Ashrei Ish Asher Yareh Hashem, talking about people who are Yareh Hashem, Talmid Chacham, those that are Yareh Hashem, Aleo Lo Yibol, their leaves will not wither. Meaning that even those insignificant parts of them were worthy of keeping, worthy of being Nishmar. And so it's over here. Even the little Sicha, Sichat Chulin as they call it, of the Talmid Chachamim, you listen to them because you can learn something from it. Rashi calls sichato, which is lishon sichat chulim v'simcha. It's something that's not a kodesh nature, a nature of Torah, but it's also v'simcha, he says. Calls it something that has a certain amount of joy associated with it, things that are more frivolous in nature. Still, from that you can gain, from that which the Talmidei Chachamim say, and you should not just think that when they're speaking in Torah or Psak Halacha, here you just had a casual conversation between Rav Gamliel and the Chachamim, and look what you learned, all these two things that you can learn from. And that's what Mishnah is teaching us. Even from that simple conversation, you learn something about the halachot of Sukkah. Hasomeich sukato bikarei amita kshera. Someone who puts up his sukkah on the frame of the bed is kshera. Ryudomer, imenu yachol alamod bifnei atzma psula. If it's not self-sustaining, then it's problematic. If you move the bed and the sukkah is going to collapse, you have a problem over here. So now my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? Pligi bar Rabbi Zera v'Rabbi Abba bar Mamel Chadam Rabbi Pnei Shein Lakeva. Problem is that Rabbi Yehuda requires a Dirat Keva. Over here, the bed is metaltel. It moves around. You're going to move it, the sukkah is going to collapse. So you can't have that as your Dirat Keva. Chadam Mar, Pnei Shein Mamidah v'davar mikabel tuma. Because you're using something to structurally hold it that is mikabel tuma. This is something that we discussed in the past. Until now, the Gemara has only required that the schach not be mikabel tuma. It said nothing about what's holding up the schach. Now we have the introduction of something that we know from the halacha, is that which is sustaining the schach also cannot be mikabel tuma. The ma'abidim, those that hold things that hold up the schach, also cannot be mikabel tuma. As Rashi says, and this is a principle within the world of tuma, that the ma'amid, the thing that structurally holds up an item, is what gives the item its character. So therefore, if the ma'amid is mikabel tuma, even though the schach is not mikabel tuma, it will become something, quote-unquote, that is mikabel tuma, because the ma'amid, the most important factor that keeps the schach up, is mikabel tuma. So therefore, we try to avoid not only the schach being mikabel tuma, but even the things that structurally hold up the schach. My benayu. What's the nafkamina between their principles? You take metallic poles, you embed them in the ground, and then you put the schach on top of them. You don't get any better than that. Metal poles, that's definitely a really good structure, and that won't be a problem according to Rebuda. Now you have a Dirat Keva. Metal is Mikabel Tuma, and now you're holding up your Sukkah with something that is Mikabel Tuma. So that's what the problem is over here. Now Tosafot points out over here that even the one who says that that he has to agree with that position, that the pligi nami b'taim of the Dirat Keva. He has to agree with Dirat Keva. First, we know it's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And number two is he says that the Gemara does not bring over here another example. It could have brought an example of a very large utensil. A very large utensil is not mikabel tuma because of its size. There's a certain size requirement. If you get on beyond a certain size, which is not mitaltel, it's not a movable item when it's full and empty, then it's no longer mikabel tuma. It's too big to be a pligi anymore. It's no longer classified as a pligi because it's too big. So why does the Gemara bring an example like that? You have this massive pli, and then you put schach on top of it. So in terms of being mikabel tuma, it's not mikabel tuma. In terms of it being a dirat keva, a person keva, it's not a keva. Because you can move it. If it's not empty, you can move it around. So then that would have been a great nafkamina between these two individuals. The Gemara doesn't bring that because even the one who says that mami be mikabel tuma, he also requires it to be keva. He requires both things. That's why they use the example of the metal poles, because metal poles are definitely keva. It's only a question of if they're mekabel tumah or not, and that would make the difference. That's only if he puts the schach and he's resting it on the mitah. But if he actually puts the schach on top of the mitah itself, it's kshera. My time. What's the reason? The mandam are the fish in la keva, hariyesh la keva. Now it's permanent. You're no longer putting it on something that is mekabel tuma. You're not resting it on the bed itself. You're not resting it on the bed frame itself. Rather, you're misachech on the bed. Rashi explains it here. What he does is, he puts up a frame around it, and then he puts up the schach. Here it's going to be detached from the bed. So what happens is if you pull the bed out, schach stays, sukkah stays, not going anywhere. So that's fine. Number two is, you're using the bed, so why is the bed in there? Using the bed for its walls. The bed itself will act as the walls for the sukkah, but not the support for the schach. So when the bed's in there, you have your walls, and the schach is permanent. It's not supporting the schach. So you don't have a problem of mekabel tuma, because the support for the schach is not mekabel tuma. You don't have a problem of keva, because when you pull the bed out, it still stays up the schach. And Tosafot also points out that as even if the mitah there reduces the airspace less than 10 tefachim, Because that's still considered to be a sukkah. The bed, even though it's there and becoming the walls of your sukkah, nevertheless, when you put a bed in there, nobody says when you put in the bed there, it reduces the amount of space in the sukkah. Because that's what, exactly, you build the sukkah and then you gotta live in it, so you put a bed in there. So even from the top of the bed to the top of the skach, it's less than 10 tefachim, it's still kasher as long as there's 10 tefachim to the ground over there, and that's fine. In the end, that's how we can set it up in a case where it'll work. It'll work where you don't have it resting on the bed directly. The skach is not then have a problem of being standing on the kabbalei tuma. It's still permanent because you pull the bed up, it's still standing. In that case, even Rabbi Huda will agree that it is fine to do it in that manner, rather than when you lay it directly on the bed. Using the post or the frame of the bed to rest it on, then you have both problems. You pull the bed away, the skach collapses. You are being mamidit with something that's been kabbal tuma. Both of those, according to the opinions here, would be problematic according to Rabbi Huda. And that's why it doesn't work. That's what Rabbi Huda argues in our Mishnah, as opposed to, in this case, where he would agree that it works. Okay, we'll stop over here.